Hey, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagmann Report. It is Monday, February 3rd, 2025. I want to thank those people who took part in the supporters meeting last night. May God bless each and every one of you. I had a great time, and I want to thank you for being part of the a structure that keeps this platform on the air. You guys are, and ladies are fabulous, and I feel like you're family. I really do, and I appreciate that. And speaking of family, with me is John Moore, the LibertyMan.com, and together we suffered a loss this weekend of a friend, someone you know, ladies and gentlemen, that came to my aid when I was just here a couple of weeks ago when I had that, COVID stuff or whatever. And he sat in and took care of business for me. As a matter of fact, Kirk Finney passed away this past Friday. I believe it was Saturday morning in his sleep. And John Moore this morning dedicated his program to Kirk, and as we are, he was a good friend of John's, good friend of mine, good friend of Eric the Tech. He leaves behind a wife and children and grandchildren. He was only 64 years old, younger than me, and younger than John, and it's just maybe it's only the good die young, I guess. Remember the song, but. But it just, it just hurts. It really hurts. Here's about, I don't know, 35, 40 seconds of Kirk, his last appearance on the show, interacting with Eric in memory and honor of Kirk. Here it is. Cut one. No, okay. Sorry about that. But folks, you know who I'm talking about. And, prayers for his family and his children, grandchildren, and his wife. Just a beautiful family. It's amazing. And by the way, at the end of the show, I have a little special thing for him and his family.
Yeah, as long as Trump's on our side, that's all it is a reprieve.
Yep.
Just like last time.
Only he's more educated at this point, and I'd love to see some of these people get punished, for what they've done, because it's just absolutely incredible. People like, General Milley and, Fauci and these other people that were really, heavily involved. I mean, the bosses at the FBI, all these people, they just need to pay the price.
Gonna miss you, Kirk. All right. With me again, John Moore, thelibertyman.com. What a weekend, by the way. Oh, my goodness. If you haven't, if you've been under a rock this weekend, just in case you haven't been paying attention to the news, which I know a lot of people don't over the weekend, President Trump has hit the ground running a couple of weeks ago, January 20th, sworn in, hit the ground running, learned from everything that was thrown at him for really a decade. And now is turning to countries and saying, look, you've got to play ball. You've got to stop. Enhance border security in the case of both Mexico and Canada. You've got to, we have to make trade much more fair, equitable than it is now. And of course, everyone immediately was up in arms. And Trudeau, he got his little, that little hairs on his back, standing up. And, of course, both Mexico and Canada have since rethought their positions and kind of gave in. So we have a wrap-up video wrap for and that kind of explains. What I was looking for was throughout the day today was kind of a a summary of what happened this weekend, and I do have that. But before I play that, and Eric the Tech, just to give you a heads up, that's cut 9. But before I play that, I'm going to bring John Moore on thelibertyman.com. In case you have not, folks, in case you have not done so already, go to thelibertyman.com. The link will be in the program description box at hagmanpi.com, and make sure you subscribe, or I'm sorry, you bookmark his website, you check his website daily, and you listen daily to the Liberty Man, John Moore's radio show. I'm telling you what, it is something you've got to do because it's necessary. He's got just a wide array of guests on and a lot of information. You know, I choose very, I choose what I listen to. So about maybe, 8 to 10 shows I listen to pretty much on a daily basis. And I know that's hard to consider, especially when the shows are 2-3 hours long, but you get through them. And, depending on the topic and such, you know, and John's show is one that I listen to. So thelibertyman.com. John, how are you, sir?
Fantastic. Good to be here. Doug, thank you very much. Yeah, good to be here.
Tremendous loss over the weekend, John. I know that you knew Kirk and his wife.
Kirk's been to my home. We've been together one-on-one a number of times, he and I and his wife and my wife. And it was a great loss to all of us. And it just reminds me, I started doing something as a 19-year-old most 19-year-olds don't do, which was read the obituaries, because Vietnam was going hot and heavy, and I knew that I would see the names of my friends if I read the obituaries. Another reminder that life is short, and make the best of it, Doug.
Yeah, indeed. Yes. I mean, I can't add to that except to say if you're married, give your wife or husband a hug, and if you have kids, give them a hug, and pay some extra special attention to them. And I think in a way, and this is just totally off the cuff, I think God is calling our people home, or his people home. I have got nothing to back that up except to say, look, you know, there are some people out there that he needs in his realm. And I think that's happening right now as we are facing, I think, a quickening of things. But then that's just my viewpoint. So John, I kind of want to start out, if you don't mind, I want to start out giving with a weekend roundup.
Let's do that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then I want your comments on the other side, because we have a couple of several issues. And then I want to get into what's going on with the FBI, with USAID, of course, and the FBI. In your case, you were talking about the Department of Education. I think we need to really talk about that and everything else that is on your radar. But first, let's go to Cut 9 as sort of a, and again, I found this as one of the best summaries of this weekend, and this is Grant Sinchfield. I think he did the best, and this aired tonight, just about 2.5-3 hours ago. But here's Cut 9, and folks, pay attention because there's a lot of info in here. Here it is.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Sinchfield. President Trump promised us we would get tired of so much winning. Well, I'm never going to get tired of winning, Mr. President. But I can tell you, if you do get tired of winning, this weekend had to be exhausting. There was so much winning. Let's start with the Panama Canal. President Trump raised the national security concerns of the Panama Canal being literally run by China now through their Belt and Road Initiative, which is nothing more than a loan shark program on behalf of China to take over sovereign nations like Panama. So President Trump dispatches Secretary of State Marco Rubio to go talk to the leadership in Panama, saying, hey, no more China running this canal, otherwise you're going to have big problems. And lo and behold, the president of Panama announces they will not be renewing any contracts with China. Listen to this.
An important thing, which is a decision that I adopted and communicated it to him. The Memorandum of Understanding of the year 2017. On the road, Belt and Roll Initiation will not be renewed by my government.
There you go. That means China out as running many of the areas of the Panama Canal. That is a good thing. But here's the thing with President Trump. He never stops. Never stops with the pressure. This may not even be good enough. This is President Trump today.
We either want it back or we're going to get something very strong or we're going to take it back. And China will be dealt with. And we didn't give that to China. We gave it to Panama. We shouldn't have given it to Panama. But Panama, as you know, has violated the agreement, totally violated the agreement. So that's in the process right now. But they did have a very good meeting with the head of Panama.
All right. So here's the thing. We'll see all options still on the table, but things moving in the right direction. Clearly, I would call it a victory. Now to tariffs. So much talk about tariffs. The reason tariffs, and President Trump has convinced me, I'm a tariff guy because I now see the writing on the wall that I'm tired of Americans being taken advantage of. I'm tired of our southern border being wide open and abused by drug traffickers pushing fentanyl into America that's killing Americans at a rate of 75 to 100,000 Americans per year. And Canada and Mexico sit by and do nothing about it. So this so-called trade war, President Trump said, hey, 25% tariffs on Canada, 25% tariffs on Mexico. It lasted less than 24 hours. First, it was Mexico to cave. The president of Mexico saying, you know what, we'll put 10,000 troops on the border and we'll get it under control. OK, President Trump says, pause the tariffs 30 days. Then after Justin Trudeau's blustery little dopey comments, which was going to get him in more hot water with America, he then smartens up and says, you know what, we're going to put 10,000 troops on the Canadian border to stop the fentanyl and drugs coming into America, and terrorists, by the way. Canada has vowed to spend $1.3 billion in border security. They will designate the cartels, and yes, the Mexican cartels operate in Canada. That's something not a lot of people talk about, but it's very true. Canada says they will designate them a foreign terrorist organization. And for that, Trump has paused the tariffs for 30 days now. Here's what I want you to know. President Trump's talk of tariffs is not a bluff. This man fully believes that America has been taken advantage of for far too long. American citizens have been forced to pick up the bill for the wild spending of members of Congress. And it's time we start raising money. People will have to pay to play in the greatest free market in the world. And so that's what tariffs are about. Here's President Trump.
And I love the people of Canada. I disagree with the leadership of Canada. And something's going to happen there. But if they want to play the game, I don't mind. We can play the game all they want. Mexico, we've had very good talks with them. And this is retaliatory. This is retaliatory to a certain extent. Millions of people flowed into our country through Mexico and Canada. And we're not going to allow that.
So tariffs can be used for two reasons. They can be used to retaliate against nations that are acting in a manner that is not in the best interest of the United States. Clearly, open borders, not in the best interest of the United States. It can also be used as a tool to raise money. President Trump ought to go after the European Union. Start tariffing goods coming in from them. This is about leverage. America has it. This is a fabulous economy here. Everybody wants to be in it. And so clearly the politicians in Canada and Mexico, in some respects, are not happy about the might that President Trump brings with him. This is a politician in Canada.
I think with Donald, it's so important that he looks like he's won something. I mean, this isn't gunboat diplomacy. This is really, I don't know, like Al Capone in a syphilitic period trying to do a shakedown. So, yeah, we'll make concessions on something that, you know, he can write a press release about. But on key areas, Canadians would, I think, would hunt our leaders down if they bowed and kissed the ring to the man from Mar-a-Lago. It's not going to happen.
Well, it did happen. And you can talk about a press release this, a press release that. 77% of Canada's imports come from the United States.
All right. That's I think that's a pretty good overview. One comment on the Panama Canal. The Panama Canal Treaty of 1977. I know this is not history class in high school, okay? But President Jimmy Carter and Panamanian Chief of Government Torrijos signed the Panama Canal Treaty and Neutrality Treaty on September 7th, 1977, ultimately giving the canal, the operation of the canal over to Panama in 1999. Okay, that's the Panama Canal Treaty of 1977. We built that. We built, America built a canal at a cost of 38,000 lives, and untold blood, sweat, tears, and what have you, in the 20th century. And it's just an incredible feat that happened. Now, since that time, Panama, and this is important for people to understand, and the Epoch Times did a great, just a fantastic overview of this. There was built into the treaty was a neutrality agreement, of course, and it was part of the name. And that is no country would take over the canal. Well, you had an international law expert testifying before the U.S. Senate on national security threats to the Panama Canal. He said that foreign operations, specifically the Chinese Communist Party, is prohibited. And but yet they have de facto control of the ports on both ends of the canal, which does violate the treaty. And I'm not 100% certain based on my research, and I think this will be an argument for experts, and maybe John knows, that if neutrality agreement is violated, what happens? What's the, honestly, what's the penalty for that? Does it revert back to the U.S.? I didn't see anywhere in there where it would. However, there has to be some stopgap built into that. And lastly, and then I'm going to turn this over to John about the canal. Michael Yon has been down in the Darien Gap for forever. And I think people need to really understand that this is more than the canal. This is part of the Belt and Road Initiative, as stated by China. This involves the Darien Gap. Let me just, I took some notes here. Okay. The CCP made some inroads within Panama itself, okay? But within Central and South America through their Belt and Road Initiative. And they have some advantages built into the government of Panama, the CCP does, based on, for lack of a better way to describe it, would be payoffs and graft and such. Okay, so the... There's construction of the bridge, and folks, if you follow Michael Yon in the Darien Gap area, that Mayorkas also helped facilitate, is helping to facilitate. But the Pan American Highway, which is part, again, part of the CCP's Belt and Road Initiative, if you want to look at this in a manner that makes sense for the takeover of the U.S. The Pan America Highway along the West Coast from Tierra del Fuego through the major ports in both South America, in Argentina, North America, and the Great Lakes, and at the Great Lakes to Alaska's Prudhoe Bay, and then into Asia, Russia. I'm telling you, this is extremely important to the security, the national security of the U.S. And so this does involve the Panama Canal as well. And with the tariffs and such, they are what they are. You saw President Trump lay the hammer down and then back away. And you saw the reaction from Trudeau, Castro Jr., and of course the Mexican president, all of a sudden now saying, "Okay, well, we're gonna play ball." So, John, with all of that said, and I'm gonna be quiet now, but with all that said, that kind of a recap, we're back, baby. I mean, in this case, we're back. What are your thoughts? Or is this just a temporary thing, do you think? Or what are your thoughts on all of this?
Well, okay, here's my thoughts. First of all, it was very disappointing that Jimmy Carter, who was an officer in the United States Navy, would harm national security by turning over the Panama Canal to the Panamanians. It's not a matter of money only, not a matter of sovereignty only. It's a matter of national security. And having the most likely enemy that we have on the planet, that would be the Communist Party of China, having anything to do with the Panama Canal is really scary. There's been talk of the Chinese building a new canal, which I don't know if that ever was going to go through or not. I haven't kept up with it, but they were talking about building a new canal. There's also talk of expanding the current locks that they can accommodate larger ships, which a century ago when it was built, it was more than big enough for every ship they could ever imagine. But the super tankers can't go through there. Our largest aircraft carriers can't go through there. And something needs to be done to expand the size of the locks on the Panama Canal. Anyway, it's a good move. President Trump has been using his negotiating skills the way they should be used. What we're seeing now is an example of what President Trump could not do because he was ate up with legal entanglements his entire 4 years at first term, civil lawsuits, criminal lawsuits, and his best people leaving his administration. That would be Bobby Kennedy Jr. leaving within 4 to 6 weeks, maybe 8 weeks at the most. General Flynn, the two guys they were really fearful of was General Flynn and Bobby Kennedy Jr. And the powers that be, the Senior Executive Service, the CIA, they got rid of these two guys relatively quickly before they could really be effective. Now we have Bobby Kennedy back in the administration full blast. General Flynn is in an advisory status. He's not holding any specific office, but he's offering his advice and counsel to President Trump. And it was 2 weeks ago today at noon, Eastern time, that President Trump raised his right hand. It's been a blistering 2 weeks in terms of what this man has done. He signed, I believe, more than 350 executive orders. I haven't seen any complete list. I need to go through that. There's no precedence for any president ever hitting the ground running and doing as much in only 2 weeks as this president, Doug. And I'm, with the exception of his support for new mRNA vaccines and his continuing support for vaccines, I would say I'm 95% in favor of everything the man's done, Doug.
You know, I agree with you on that. And I don't know what to say about his support of mRNA junk. I mean, could this be a head fake? I mean, it could
well,
be.
I was in a conference in Tulsa, Oklahoma last year where several men and women, about three of them, had conversations with President Trump about vaccines in general and a COVID vaccine. And he just told them flat out he was not going to address that issue publicly. So I see President Trump
publicly. That's an important caveat, right? Though, right?
Well, it is an important caveat. But we also see President Trump reinstating all 8,400 service members who were discharged under honorable conditions, medical discharge, because they refused the COVID vaccination, being reinstated with full back pay. That tells me a lot that he's done that. And he's straddling the fence. I'm not sure why. I'm sure the man has his reasons why he would straddle the fence in terms of vaccines. Two members of the Bobby Kennedy team have been not allowed to continue as part of Kennedy's team because of their very public stance against all vaccines. And President Trump has admitted he fully supports the polio vaccine, which has been proven to be dangerous and contain cancer elements as well. So it's a bit of a corundum what President Trump is doing and not doing concerning COVID-19 vaccines in general. I'm not going to complain. This President Trump is about as good as it's going to get in terms of turning a ship of state around from all the harmful things that's been going on for decades, going back to how far back you want to go. 1913, when the Federal Reserve was established, the Roosevelt administration, when Kennedy was assassinated. There's lots of points you can point to where the deep state gained further and further control of the country in general, finances in general.
Let me ask you a pointed question here, because during our meeting last night, we were talking about the tariffs specifically, and if you look at pre-1913 America, specifically from, I'm going to say from 1890. Yeah, I mean, well, 1890, the glory days back then. When you look at how we existed by way of tariffs. There was no income tax.
No.
Okay. And then you hear, of course, the word tariff now being used on a daily basis, almost an hourly basis, by President Trump. And then, of course, the formation of an external revenue service as opposed to an internal revenue service. My question to you is this. Do you think it may be just possible that President Trump is looking to do away with the IRS income tax, that is, as we know it? Perhaps not fully, but as we know it.
Well, Doug, okay, first of all, I'm a graduate paralegal, which legally allows me to do anything an attorney does except represent a client in court, which over the past half century, I've done everything an attorney does except represent a client in court. Now, I have a private library. I'm sure you do, too, most of our listeners. My library includes a copy of the Internal Revenue Service Code, which is 10,000 pages plus.
I had to move mine to the garage. I'm serious. I had to move mine out of my library because it was just, yeah.
The index is in the front of the Internal Revenue Code instead of the back. And under L for liabilities, you will find every tax liability that any person or corporation could ever owe the United States government. Nothing's left out. And there's one tax that's not listed under liabilities. Guess which one is not listed?
Income.
That's right. It's not there.
No.
It's not there. You don't have a beginning point. You don't have a beginning point to decide whether you owe or do not owe a tax on income tax, because there is no beginning point. Beginning point being liability.
Right. That's exactly. And people have a hard time wrapping their head around. I saw in the chat, just real briefly, the 1040s that you sign, you know, that's a voluntary assessment.
Right.
Okay, so you're signing it. And once you sign it, you're saying, okay, yeah, I owe this money.
Right.
Like a contract. But anyway, I don't want to get too deep in the weeds on that, but people do. That's a voluntary contract. Go ahead.
Well, it is, and enough. It's, there's been several, and I haven't talked about it recently, but there's several thousand IRS employees who don't file a return every year because they know what I know. They're not liable, so why would they even do that? The odds of this fact being known better publicly can't be denied. I think eventually a greater and greater portion of the American public will learn that there is no liability for income tax, so they're going to stop filing. And President Trump's trying to get ahead of that, I believe. And let's go back to what we did before 1913 and finance the federal government with these tariffs. And, of course, shrink the federal government also, which is in the process of happening as we speak. There's no precedence for what's going on in terms of eliminating federal employment, federal jobs. There simply isn't.
No, and I'm one of the big deals, and I'll say this because I obviously this agency played a role in Ukraine. It's played a role in I think 57 maybe more, maybe that number's off by a little bit, but overthrows of governments, and that's the USAID. Elon Musk, through his organization, DOGE, they basically shuttered USAID, which kind of on a tangent from what you're saying with respect to all of the with respect to, you know, cutting out some unnecessary waste in or waste in our government, this is a big thing. And what I'll do now is cut 10, because we're going to be talking about this, folks. Mike Benz did a video about what USAID is or is not. USAID is not about aid. It's a deep state foreign interference agency. It's really an arm of the CIA. It was involved in Ukraine, in the Ukraine revolutions. It was involved pretty much everywhere where there was an overthrow of the government. It has nothing to do with aid. It is Agency for International Development. It is not aid, Agency for International Development. So anyway, we'll play cut 10 and then your thoughts on the other side, because
okay,
this is a big deal. And I mean, you're a paralegal. As an investigator, I used to do bank audits. You walk in to a bank and, for example, with a team of investigators or a crew of investigators, and just a routine audit, you would put audit tape on the drawers of, well, say the manager's desk. So when that'd be like at 6 o'clock in the morning. So when you came in at 7:30 or 8, you sat down with him and you'd break the tape and go through every drawer, you know, with him, see what's in there. And also you would audit the actions of the bank and the employees. And the reason I mentioned that is because that's what's happening, in a sense, that's what's happening now. Marco Rubio is the head of this. Elon Musk is doing this. The Doge team is doing this. And many, and really USAID is the epitome of the deep state. But here's cut 10 and then your discussion afterwards. Okay. It'll be directly to you. Go ahead, Eric, cut 10.
So what is USAID? When people hear the name USAID, they focus on aid. They focus on thinking like it's humanitarian work. But aid is not actually in the name of USAID. USAID stands for the United States Agency for International Development. Not aid. It's not a charity. And international development is simply capacity building. It is local and regional capacity building done across the whole world, i.e. internationally. The primal id in USAID, international development, is about capacity building of assets that can be used by either the Pentagon, the State Department, or the CIA for their own activities. So if you're the Secretary of State and you were asked by the National Security Council or the President to do something in a different country, overthrow their government, stop the passage of a bill in a foreign country's legislature, how would you do that? And the first thing that I said is you would look at the assets that already exist in the country. Do we need new assets in addition to the ones that we currently have, or are the existing assets, can they achieve this simply by giving them enough money, giving them enough resources, giving them enough training, giving them enough support? One of the main ways that capacity building would be financed would be through USAID. USAID would say that it's doing something, funding a hospital system, funding universities, funding civil society organizations, funding media institutions, funding independent media in the region. Sorry, it's something in my eye. Independent media in the region on USAID payroll. And those institutions, those assets, would then be bigger and more powerful and more capable of serving the State Department's goal, aka advancing U.S. national interests. USAID has a bigger budget than the State Department, over $50 billion. It has a bigger budget than the CIA. The entire intelligence community only has about $72 billion. So that's the CIA plus the 16 others. And USAID has a bigger budget than the CIA and is almost the size of the entire intelligence community combined. That is how important USAID is to American statecraft. It is an intelligence community a State Department, and a Pentagon assistance organization rolled into one. I just copied this from the USAID website. USAID carries out U.S. foreign policy, advances U.S. national interests by promoting broad-scale human progress. At the same time, it expands stable, free societies, creates markets and trade partners for the United States, and fosters goodwill abroad. The operative phrases here are carries out U.S. foreign policy. This is not charity work. This is not aid. This is cynical, self-serving purposes. And what is it seeking to do? Free societies, open societies. Why does USAID want other countries to be open societies? Because that's how you get the influence in. If a country is a closed society, they're closed off from USAID influence. We cannot capacity build our assets there. Closed societies box USAID out. China is a closed society. That is why we have not been able to topple the government of China, despite having tried for 100 years now almost. We have not been able to topple Putin from Russia. Why? Because Russia is a closed society. Like China, they kicked USAID out. It is not an open society. And so the USAID can't just take over their entire media ecosystem by funding 100 different media propaganda outlets in the region to sway hearts and minds. And remember, that's what this is. It's hearts and minds and cash. That's what soft power is. They call it hearts and minds work, but it's cash that does the moving of those hearts and minds, especially of the leaders of the movements.
John, I thought I was in school when I saw that, but you know, I think it's important because when President Trump became president, was sworn in, one of the first things he did was order a near total freeze on all foreign aid. And about a week later, last week, Secretary of State Marco Rubio issued a waiver for humanitarian aid. And then despite that waiver, of course, there was a lot of confusion about what agencies should do. And then last week, it was January 27th, the agency's official government website, USAID's website, was shut down. And then today, Elon Musk, what he announced was that he and President Trump were in the process of shutting down USAID for that very reason that you saw, you know, what it was doing. And also Marco Rubio announced that he had been appointed acting administrator of USAID by President Trump and that the agency was being merged into the State Department, much to the chagrin of the deep state denizens of the U.S. So your thoughts on this? I mean, well, it's a big deal.
Up until the last 2 days, using my wife as an example, who's an educated woman who stays up with all the goings on in the world, she had no idea USAID even existed. I would say between 3 and 5%, 5% is very optimistic, probably 3% of the adults in this country have had any idea before 2 days ago and that USAID even existed, let alone what its mission statement was. And for myself, I've known USAID to be a CIA front for decades. It's common knowledge in certain elements of our society, if you are, you know, part of that element of our society. So it's a good thing, I think. Of course, foreign aid in general is not well known how it really works. The majority of foreign, now this is separate from USAID, foreign aid is typically Ford, Chevy, Dodge trucks, Caterpillar tractors, John Deere tractors, airplanes from Cessna, manufactured goods that leave the country. With the exception of Afghanistan and Iraq, typically foreign aid is not shrink-wrap pallets of $100 bills. Foreign aid is U.S. manufactured goods leaving this country to go wherever they go. That's typically what foreign aid is, as opposed to cash, which is, there's major exceptions. But which is why foreign aid is so popular with Congress, because the items being shipped overseas are manufactured in the congressional districts all over the country. So that's why it's so popular and has been for decades.
Right. No, you're exactly right. Do you think by President Trump's actions right now, do you think that people are waking up to the fact that the U.S. is really the major exporter of color revolutions of governments all across the planet, along with I mean, the CIA and their cutouts like USAID. Do you think people are starting to understand, hey, wait a second, we're really behind a lot of this, a lot of the uprisings, a lot of the turmoil behind Ukraine? I mean, are people waking up?
I haven't done an analysis as to who's doing the most, whether it's Russia, China, or United States. I don't know that Russia's doing that much anymore. They have in the past, especially in Africa. I would say, with my limited knowledge, that China is certainly a lot more active in Africa. In fact, a friend of mine, Command Sergeant Major Page, was in Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, for a year. His assignment was to document what the Communist Chinese are doing in sub-Saharan Africa, which is building roads, electric generating plants, airports, hospitals, all kinds of infrastructure all over central south sub-Saharan Africa.
Right.
And they are building, since the 1950s, been building a highway from China to Africa, and are about to build a causeway from the Horn of Africa to Saudi Arabia, which would cut down about 4 to 6 days road travel. That's a real deal. What China is doing, and of course, all along that road between China and Africa, they're exerting their influence in one way or another. I understand the highway is built. That's what Command Sergeant Major Page told me. It's only open to Chinese authorized vehicles. The local vehicles cannot use it unless they have special authorization. And the road is basically finished and ready for use from China to Africa.
Think about that, folks. I didn't know that. Okay. So,
another aspect of this, for our Christian friends, the Bible mentions in the book of Revelation a million horse cavalry coming out of the east. Well, it just so happens the Chinese are amassing a million horse cavalry that will travel from China to the Middle East at the appointed time. The men on these horses will probably be the great, 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 how many greats there are between Genghis Khan and the Chinese cavalry. In the modern age, cavalry does have a lot of advantages in terms of logistics. They can, as long as there's food, something for them to eat and some water along the way, they'll just keep moving.
Wow. Okay. And we, I guess, in a sense, we are facilitating this invasion from the east, or we have been, I should say. Very interesting. But by the way, folks, just a quick break here to let you know. I was waiting on just verification of this. I just received it a couple of minutes ago. Randy Taylor, of course, underwent surgery today. He is doing well. Okay. I was waiting on that final confirmation. He's doing well and he appreciates your prayers. He'll be in the hospital a couple of days at least, and then he'll be back and ornery as ever. Later.
Well, good to hear that. I'm glad to hear that. That's great.
I wanted to wait until I got that last note because, it's you going for surgery, then afterwards you got to, I don't know, whatever they do, and you know. So, but he's awake. He's heavily sedated, but nonetheless, he's gonna. Everything's looking good. So. There you go, folks.
That's okay. Great news. Glad to hear it. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So, and folks, again, with me is John Moore, thelibertyman.com. You know him. You like him. You got to listen to his show every morning from 8 to 11 Eastern time, 7 his time, 7 a.m., which is why at night, these nights, like tonight when he's on, you know, it's a big thing for him to be on because, hey, it's
I took a little nap earlier, and I'll be fine tomorrow morning. I'll be in good shape.
Well, you always are fine. I mean, I'll tell you what, this show, your show, I mean, it's fantastic. You're fantastic, so I appreciate that. But you are really spreading yourself. You're really doing a lot to inform the people, and we appreciate that. We really do, John. I'm telling you. But okay. Okay. You were talking about the Department of Education. Now, I don't have anything in my show notes to really address this. So I'm going to let, if you don't mind, I'm going to let you address the Department of Education, what you think is going to happen there, because I do want to come back to not just USAID, but the FBI, what's going on there. Folks, you can't, I mean, look, there are, with respect to the FBI, I just want to give you, ladies and gentlemen, this little stat, if you don't mind. The FBI's got about 13,700 agents, okay? Think about this. 56 field offices, 13,700 field agents. In total, about 37,000 employees, including the, you know, the people that work in the offices. But with respect to agents, and again, we're going to get back to this, but think about this. 13,700 agents, 5,000. That's almost half. 5,000 were tasked to work 2,500 J6 cases. Okay, think about that for a second. That's two agents for every J6, every person at January 6th at the Capitol. Or not at the Capitol. And even more against the parents at school board meetings and Christians praying at abortion clinics at charnel houses. It's amazing to think about this, but we'll have more on that later. But getting back to John, let's talk about the Department of Education, because that seems to be in the sights of President Trump and others in this administration. What are your thoughts?
Well, besides something we said earlier, the Department of Education educates nobody. We had an educational system that was arguably one of the best on the planet prior to the Department of Education coming into existence. For example, the highest SAT scores was the year I graduated from high school, 1966. They've gone down every year since. They've artificially changed the test to artificially bring up the test scores.
Did you break it, John? I mean, did you break the SAT? No, you're exactly right, though. 66 onward, it's been a downward trend.
And it's easily provable what happened and why. Teaching English language is best done using phonics. And myself and most of our listeners, probably say over the age of 50, had the Dick and Jane readers, which came out in the 1930s. And that was the beginning of sight reading. Now, the teachers still taught phonics because they knew that's what they were taught in teachers' college. They continued doing it. By 1966, however, that was the last hurrah, shall we say, of American teenagers who'd been taught phonics properly at a very young age and learned the English language properly. Now, all education is based on two things, language skills and mathematics skills. Those are two things that are the basis for all learning all the time. And they basically destroyed the language part of teaching when they took away phonics. Now, it became incredibly evident and well-known in the early 70s when a private company came up with a program called Hooked on Phonics,
yep,
attempting to replace what the school district had dropped decades before, with some limited success. We're now at a point now where half the adults, actually slightly more, 51%, according to the Department of Education, they do some things right, they have some statistics, 51% of the adults in this country are illiterate.
Now, functionally illiterate or just...
I'm using the term illiterate because that's okay. The term they use.
All right.
they can probably read the label on a bottle of ketchup, maybe, but... we're at a point now, and I'll use my son-in-law as an example. My son-in-law is He's had some college education, not a whole lot, but some. He's been successful in his chosen career, a great father, great husband, a great provider for the family. Here's what he tells me. He says, John, if I want to read anything of a serious nature, I have to close the door and have to have complete silence, and I will read it only because I have to, not because it's fun, not because it's pleasure, but because I have to read it, something work-related, something that has to be read. Point being, for adults in this country under age 50, reading is something that's not done routinely for fun or for pleasure. It's done only when they have to because they have such limited skills. When you learn English language with phonics, you're limited to about a vocabulary of about 5,000 words, which may sound like a lot, but it's not really.
Not really, no.
There's over 100,000 words in the English dictionary. And with that limitation, you're limited. And here's what happens with phonics. With phonics, you learn how to interpret words you've never seen before. And that gives everybody who's learned phonics a tremendous edge when it comes to reading that people who never learned phonics don't have. They can't look at an unfamiliar word and make sense of it because they didn't learn phonics. And of course, it was a little bit after that that they attacked mathematics to the point now where I would say majority of our young students are mathematically illiterate also. They simply can't do simple math. And we hear the stories all the time, Doug, about how a young clerk in a store or the post office can't make simple change without using a calculator. It's really humiliating. But that's most young people most of the time. When I say young people, once again, men and women under the age of 50.
You and I are old enough to remember this. I remember when we didn't have a U.S. Department of Education. I'm old enough to remember that. The Department of Education, as it exists now, a cabinet-level department, was really formed in 79 and it became operational in 1980. Okay. I know that there were predecessor type groups, but the official U.S. Department of Education as we know it, was started in 1980 or began in 1980. Right now it's got almost 5,000, around 5,000 employees. And it's part of the U.S. Secretary of Education. It's a cabinet, position, I guess. But the purpose and functions, I think, have been bastardized by the government.
Well, they reward things they want to get more of. They punish things they don't want more of. Let's take Latin, for example. Latin was commonly taught in U.S. high schools all over the country. You cannot have a career in law or medicine or biology without a foundation of Latin first. You simply can't. It's not possible.
That's right.
Can't. And Latin has been eliminated in a majority of U.S. high schools, which cripples youngsters who want to have a career in medicine or law or biology. They're simply crippled from the get-go. A friend of mine worked for the St. Louis University Law School and Medical School at different times as an administrator. And she said, John, of course, St. Louis University Medical School is one of the top-rated medical schools on the planet. And so the only students that get admitted there are the best of the best. And the first week they're there, they take them to the library and say, ladies and gentlemen, this is a library. I mean, how pitiful is that? Where the top students from all over the United States and the world, they have a lot of foreign students, have never set foot in a library before.
This is a library. Okay. Yeah, we give it away. The friggin' books or what? I mean, okay. Wow. Yeah. Go ahead, John. What do you say?
We have, the Baltimore School District has been pointed out as an example of a completely failed school district where not a single student can read or write or do math at the 12th grade level when they're handed their diploma. They can barely read if they can read it at all. It's a travesty. And I don't know how much of that we can lay at the feet of the Department of Education, but I'm sure that much of what's happened to our educational system nationwide can be laid at the feet of the Department of Education because of their policies.
I'm okay with that. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So what do you think? I mean, based on everything you've researched and you're seeing right now, what do you think is going to happen? Do you think that this is going to be reabsorbed into other agencies? Kind of in the format like USAID may or right. may
there'll
not.
There'll be some functions absorbed into other agencies and others just simply done away with altogether, which they need to be. I can give you another example here locally. One of the local high schools was being pressured by these teachers to go to a four-day school week. And the discussion had nothing to do with the quality of education. It had to do with the logistics of going to a four-day school week as opposed to the quality of education the students were receiving or not receiving. Well, that's 20% of the school year just gone. And how can you possibly eliminate 20% of your school year and hope to achieve the educational goals that you have in mind for these students? I don't see how it's possible, Doug.
No. No, you're exactly right. Wow. All right. And how many?
What's happening this is happening nationwide. This is not just a unique thing in my area where I live. This is happening nationwide where school districts are going to a 4-day school week.
Right. We don't need to be doing that. No, and hell no.
It's been going on for years. I had business in a St. Louis County high school 25 years ago. I got there at noon on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I noticed everybody's leaving the campus. The students are leaving, and I saw this group of young men and women who looked like they got their clothing from the local Salvation Army. And I was talking to one of the administrators. I said, who's that bunch over there? And, oh, that's the instructors. And they all look like they got their clothing from the Salvation Army. And I said, what's going on? Oh, John, we have teachers meetings that's beginning at noon every Tuesday, which means that's 10% of the school year just got the window. That's 25 years ago. Everybody went home. All the students went home at noon, and all the teachers stayed for quote-unquote teachers meetings, whatever that meant, for the second half today.
Oh, man. What a waste of resources. So you do believe that we're going to see the dissolution of the Department of Education?
It needs to happen. It really needs to happen. Yeah.
I agree with that. And
give the control of the schools back to the local school boards. That's what was successful for what better part of two centuries. That's what worked for better part of two centuries. That's what gave us some of the best educated men and women on the planet. And with students learning math properly, learning Latin if they chose to, learning how to read and write the English language properly. That's what we need to do is go back to local control.
Exactly. No, I agree 100% there. With the states and local, look, that's the best way to handle
just,
this.
It's not just the public schools. The University of Missouri, the campus closest to me is the Rolla, Missouri, which is a world-class university of science and engineering. And they've installed litter boxes for the young women who believe they're cats. So they can relieve themselves. I'm serious. They can relieve themselves in litter boxes in the restrooms. We're normalizing mental illness is what we're doing.
Yes. Yeah, 100% we are. And this has got to stop, obviously. Again, where did I hear this? Huh. We have to bring back common sense. And I think, John, did you happen to see, this is kind of an offshoot, but talk about common sense and bringing it back. The Democratic National Committee had their meeting this weekend. Folks, I don't know if you saw this, you know, people in the chat, people listening and watching. Did you see clips from their meeting?
About who could vote and yes. the junior identity confusion?
Oh, my
Even
gosh.
Even they were confused.
Yeah, exactly. It was one of the funniest things I've seen. I don't have it in the show notes, but oh, my goodness. The guy was trying to read the rules for voting, and he was talking about two from each gender, and then he got confused, had to bring someone else
of
up.
Of course.
It's like
mental illness can be very confusing.
Oh my gosh. And people wonder why, you know, there was a mandate this election. And I, you know what, folks, I believe in my heart, I believe that there were a lot more votes for Donald Trump than were recorded. And I think a lot of people are seeing through this crap from the left and they're tired of it. That's just me, you know, but, boy, I got,
well, I see the Politburo in Russia saying, 4 months ago, these people were in charge of nuclear weapons.
Yeah. We should have pulled the pin earlier, man. Yeah. It's really ridiculous. But I want to get back to before I, maybe we won't even get further down into the USAID rabbit hole. I don't like to call it USAID. It's USAID. Anyway, before we get down there, I'm going to touch on, John, because of your law enforcement background. When I say law enforcement, I'm talking about the paralegal, the investigative, the homicide investigation background. Right. Because of right. that, we have the FBI, obviously, and as I said, 13,700 agents, roughly, and 5,000 assigned to the J6. Cases, and then even more than that assigned to the other cases. But this is important to me. Mike Davis appeared with Steve Bannon, and Mike Davis is really, to me, really good. There was a 15-minute clip where he was on, but I cut it down into three segments, but not all 15 minutes, just about 9 minutes, roughly. Okay, in total, divided by the three. I'm going to play this. I'm going to play cut A. And this is a general, okay, when he was on, I think it was this morning he was on, he explained what's going on with the FBI. And right now with the FBI, they are, even without Cash Patel coming in, they're on the ropes, man. They are afraid. Tony Gonzalez from the assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District of Florida. You know, he better not be hanging any pictures on his walls because he was responsible for the, raid at Mar-a-Lago and the going through the underwear drawers and stuff like that. He might find himself in a prison. But beyond that, what the hell's going on with the FBI at the moment? Well, let's take a look. This is, or you know what? Let's see here. Should I do that one or should, let's see, Mike Davis. And then we have, I'll tell you what, Eric the Tech, sorry to bother you with this. Can we go to video 8? This precedes the Mike Davis, I believe this does, Mike Davis interview, but this cut 8 is Julie Kelly on the latest details of the FBI purge. This is cut 8, and it's 2 minutes long. Here it is, very interesting, very much needed, cut 8.
What a tremendous day. Again, have to praise President Trump for putting the right people in place to conduct these purges, whether it's USAID, and of course, commending my friend Mike Benz, because without his diligent work on this, posting all of the information on X and Twitter, his knowledge, I'm sure, is just invaluable. So I want to give him a deserved shout out as well. But yes, so it appears that by today, all of the FBI employees had to respond to a questionnaire asking about their participation and involvement in January 6th, the overall investigation. Now, Steve, as Chris Ray used to brag, The investigation involved all 56 FBI field offices. They all were participating in the investigations, the arrests, the pre-dawn armed raids, the surveillance, you know, collecting information from big tech and from retailers and from banks to track down these people who went into a government building on a Wednesday afternoon 4 years ago. So the answers to that questionnaire was due today at 3 o'clock. And then by tomorrow, I believe at noon, the acting FBI director, who also appears to be trying to not go along with this questionnaire, trying to defy this order handed down by DOJ, he has to then provide the results of the top DOJ officials, and then we will see what they do from there. But as Nicole Wallace said, and other papers, newspapers have reported, it could be up to 6,000 agents. Even the acting FBI director, Brian Driscoll, admitted that he was part of J6 cases as well. So this has been a pervasive abuse of the law, of the FBI's powers, and we'll be interested to see the results of that survey and then what the DOJ or Kash Patel does once he's confirmed what he does with that information.
Well, okay, so it seems like most agents, the majority, were somehow involved in the J6 investigations, and you're looking at 2,500 cases in total. And the rest, of course, were involved in arresting grandmothers and parents. So that's the FBI under Biden, and it's changing rapidly. And of course, the paper that went out, the questionnaire that went out, some are refusing to partake in that, and those are the people who are going to be dismissed. So changes are coming, and I think not only that, I think some arrests are imminent. For example, okay, now this goes away from the FBI, but the acting DC U.S. Attorney Ed Martin, who's just an incredibly fantastic individual, in my view, announced that that his agency or the Department of Justice is going to file charges against individuals who threatened Elon Musk's Doge workers on a number of cases. The Gateway Pundit's running with that. And to show you that law and order is back in a certain way, two D.C. airport employees were arrested for allegedly leaking footage of that plane crash to none other than far-left CNN. So, just saying. So, yes, the FBI is, I'm telling you, they're changing. Things are changing, happening rapidly, even without Kash Patel at the helm. Your thoughts? I mean,
well, issues with the FBI have been around for decades. You may recall a little town in Missouri called Times Beach, where there was dioxin contamination back in the 1990s. I was at a public meeting near Times Beach about 25 years ago, 26, 28 years ago. There was a young man sitting near me. He was a handsome, articulate, intelligent young man who mentioned that he had training from the IWW, which I happen to know what that is, and very few Americans do. International Workers of the World, which is a communist front organization for basically going back to the 1930s.
You betcha.
Yeah. So, he piqued my interest. I acted interested in him and I got his name, his contact information, email address, phone number. And the next morning I called an FBI agent I knew pretty well. And I said, man, I got something for you. And I said, I got all this information on this communist, infiltrator, spy, whatever you want to call him. And here's a response to the FBI agent. John, it's no longer part of our mission statement to keep track of the whereabouts and doings of communist agents.
When was this?
That can't be true. I said, that can't be true. He says, well, that's what, you know, that's the way it is. It's no longer part of our mission statement. That's 25 plus years ago.
Okay. help me out here. Wasn't the FBI under Hoover? Regardless of what one might think of Hoover, his little peccadillo.
His personal, his private life.
Yeah. I mean, regardless of that, the guy, Hoover was certainly a patriot, and that was one of his big things, right?
It was. But this okay, Hoover had been gone for years, 25 years ago. But, Hoover had been gone for a long time.
So this is pre-9/11, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. In the 1990s, yeah.
Okay. Holy. Okay. Yeah, it's not our job, basically. We don't do that no more.
It's not part of our mission statement. But, you know, the mission statement includes tracking down peaceful members, speaking up at a school board meeting, spending untold thousands of hours for men and women who were doing misdemeanor trespass at the Capitol at the worst, misdemeanor trespass, which typically results in a small fine and no jail time, misdemeanor trespass.
Okay. So they, you gave them basically a lay down case almost, and they said, "Nah, that's all right." That's incredible. Absolutely incredible. Well, let's make matters worse or better in this case, because that may be a thing of the past. What you went through might be a thing of the past. What has happened to the J6ers and to the grandmothers and to the parents and to us, it might be a thing of the past. And as a matter of fact, we might have a renewed FBI. And John, let me ask you, the FBI is not really constitutional, or it's not.
I had a discussion with a couple of FBIs, and I said, gentlemen, you can have bake sales, but there's no authority in Article 1, Section 8 to spend a penny on something called the FBI. It doesn't exist.
Right. Now, are you in personally and professionally, are you in favor of the FBI kind of being, you know, no more? Or would you rather see an FBI working well to protect America's interests?
We need, there's a constitutional way to do it would be to have part of the military do it, perhaps, protect the United States against foreign adversaries, which is should be the primary mission statement of the FBI, is to protect the United States against enemies that are foreign enemies. Now, their jurisdiction mainly deals with, as you know and I know, crimes that cross state lines. That's where the majority of their jurisdiction is. Right. And maybe the State Department can handle that. But even more so than the FBI, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives needs to be done away with, especially the firearms part. The majority of the work they do is enforce the 1938 Nazi gun laws, which the 1968 Gun Control Act is a word-for-word English translation of the 1938 Nazi gun laws, in case you don't know.
Oh, people need to know that. Say that, if you don't mind. Say that again, John.
Well, the majority of work the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives does when it comes to firearms is based on the Gun Control Act of 1968, which is a word-for-word English translation of the 1938 Nazi gun laws. The senator from Connecticut requested, and he was at the Nuremberg trials, by the way, in Europe. He requested from the Library of Congress an English translation of the 1938 Nazi gun laws, which with minor changes became the law of the land, supported by the NRA at the time, by the way, of all things. Senator Dodd, that's the name of the guy, Senator Dodd from the state of Massachusetts, he requested it. And two researchers and a outfit called the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, they published a small book, Gateway to Tyranny, that documents, and they've got when you open the book, I'll hold my hands out here. On a page on the left, you've got the 1968 Gun Control Act page, and opposite the corresponding page in the 1938 Nazi gun laws. And you look back and forth between the two pages and see they're almost duplicates of one from the other.
Wow. Think about that, folks.
Well, I confronted the SAC, the special agent in charge of the ATF in St. Louis. He presented me a copy of the Gun Control Act 1968 in a binder. And I said, well, Chief, do you know that this is a English translation of 1968 Gun Control Act? He didn't answer me. I asked him a second time. He didn't answer me. A third time, he says, yes, I know. So what? Yes, I know. So what?
It's a pretty cavalier attitude. So what? Yeah, that alone. Why don't people know this? I mean,
well, it's not. The alternative media doesn't spend much time on it. The NRA, which supported the original passage of the Gun Control Act 1968, rarely addresses it. And I'm a life member of the NRA, by the way, and it's. With the exception of a rather small group called the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, there's almost no attention given to it, Doug.
So, okay. So if we learn nothing else tonight, folks, from tonight's program, which I hope is not the case, we have learned that the Gun Control Act of 1968 was an exact or nearly exact duplicate of the 1938 Nazi Gun Control Act, basically.
That's what it is. Our mutual friend Sam Andrews says the following. He says, John, they take our rights away and they sell them back to us one at a time. And
that's a good,
you know, and they do that. You know, there's a number of things that require, a small amount of money, like $200 transfer tax on a suppressor, for example, or an automatic weapon. That's all unconstitutional. There was a time before the Firearms Act was passed in 1936, I think, when you could just walk into a hardware store and buy a machine gun if you wanted to and walk out the door with it ready to go.
No, those were the days.
Those were the days. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I'll take the one on the left up there with the suppressor, and I'll take. Yeah. I can almost see how things are going right now. And folks, again, in the chat, look, I don't know, and are watching this and listening to this. Can you, and John, do you see the dismantling of the bureaucracy happening under President Trump in a fashion that brings us more constitutional? And to me, that's what the left is afraid of. They don't want to be more. They want the bureaucracy. They want the regulations. They want to be told what to do. Whereas we as Americans want to be left alone and limit government. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
I know exactly what you're saying.
So do you see this? I mean, is that what the big fight right now is about? The left is going crazy with President Trump. Oh, it's unconstitutional. We got to sue him. It's like, wow. But anyway, I mean.
Well, it's going to break down between blue cities and the rest of the country. I left St. Louis, Metro St. Louis, I think it was 2002, I believe. And, moved 100 miles away, and the difference in the culture is so dramatically different. During the COVID in 2020, I would have business in the city, maybe a wedding reception, for example, or going to a store, and people were just in lockstep with all the silliness, standing 6 feet apart, wearing masks. I went to this wedding reception for my nephew, and my in-laws were all wearing masks, and I, of course, they looked at me without a mask as if I'm violating some kind of law or something. And it's amazing difference between the blue cities and the rest of the country, which most of the country is not blue. The blue cities comprise a tiny portion of the real estate in this country, a lot of people, of course, but a tiny portion of the real estate. It's all going to work together, Doug. One of the things President Trump will be doing very soon is eliminating sodium fluoride or fluoride from the drinking water, which is,
The horror.
It needs to happen. And,
yeah.
It's poison. It's one of the most toxic substances known to mankind. It used to be sold in hardware stores as rat poison. They don't do it anymore because it's too dangerous. It's way too dangerous to let loose in the environment and let people touch it or be anywhere near it. But it's the active ingredient in several psychotropic drugs. It has the effect of making people calmer and more easily manipulated. That's one of the effects of having fluoride in your system. And if you match up the blue cities with the cities that are putting fluoride in drinking water, I think you'll find almost an exact match city by city, Doug.
Very interesting observation and concept. Yeah, it amazes me what we as a people have allowed the government to do to us. The fluoride being one example, but it's almost forgivable in a sense because people, you know, especially pre-internet, whatever. I mean, back in the halcyon days, I think, you had a tendency to, in the 50s and such, believe in the government and that they had your best interests at heart, when in fact it was far from it. And fewer people were awake then. Today, I don't think there's any excuse for not being awake and not being educated. So, John, I agree. And especially
the information is there. If you seek it out, it is there.
It is there. And because we have John Moore, folks, the Liberty Man, listen to him every weekday morning. That's 7 a.m. Central Time, 8 a.m. Eastern Time. And he's got a great show. It's because of shows like yours and hopefully this platform as well that people can now say, hey, wait a second. This is not only not constitutional, but it's they're trying to kill us. And you know, John, look, I'm going to go off script here or off the show or away from the show notes here. I want to ask you a couple of things. Since you were on last week, I want to ask you now. We saw the two airline crashes in 2 days. The Black Hawk, and I should have asked you this initially because your experience in the military, Black Hawk striking a passenger aircraft. What in the hell happened there? The family didn't, or the army, the military did not release the name of the third person in the helicopter. Why? Okay, I mean, they ultimately did, but why the delay?
Well, that was a pilot, a female, 28-year-old female pilot. Apparently, they needed time to scrub her social media accounts.
Talk to me about, with respect to that, the Black Hawk hitting the passenger airliner. Talk to me, what the hell happened here, and why, and what's going on, and who, and I want names. I want names of who to blame. I mean, you have the lives of what, 60, 67, 68 people, and perhaps more.
There's a lot of things to unwrap here, Doug.
Well, start unwrapping, brother.
I don't know that there's any blame precisely for the helicopter pilot and co-pilot. I've strongly disagreed with women being in combat for decades, going back to when I first got on radio 30 years ago. In fact, it was 30 years ago this month, last month, 30 years ago last month, I started radio in 1995. Yeah, I get that right. So that's apparently they had night vision equipment in the helicopter. My experience with night vision equipment is lights will dazzle you because they're not meant to be used when there's lights around. And
in that area, light pollution is heavy, yes.
And I've seen comments by several pilots who've used night vision while flying. They say, well, simply we lift it up on our forehead when there's, in a congested, heavily lighted area, suburban, urban area like that. We don't know what these people did on the chopper with their night vision, if they were attempting to fly with it or lift it on their forehead. The main focus seems to be on air traffic controller. We know for a fact that there was
Wait, okay. I get that. Is that just a bunch of bullshit? Excuse the line. No, I'm not gonna. Is that a bunch of BS? In other words, look, you're in a Blackhawk, okay? I don't care if you got night vision or don't have night vision, but you're flying at an altitude twice the altitude that you should be flying at, and you go. I mean, you watch the videos. I'm sorry, okay? I don't have to be a flipping air traffic controller, a pilot, or I mean, you watch the videos, and that was like a beeline right to that aircraft. Okay, to me, if I saw that without context, I would say that was like a missile that hit that aircraft. That's just me.
Right.
Is that what we saw? I mean, it almost seemed deliberate. How in the hell can you? It'd be like, look, I've been in accidents where I swear to God I didn't see the car and I hit a car. Okay, I've been there. I get it. Accidents happen. But this, you know, when you're, I don't know.
Well, hopefully there'll be some radio transmissions released from the helicopter that will help us out. If they exist, they haven't been released yet. But the focus has been on the air traffic controller for several good reasons. First of all, there's 30 slots for 30 air traffic controllers at that airport. Only 19 slots were filled. That particular night, the air traffic controller was controlling two aircraft, the jet and the helicopter, when it was supposed to be two controllers controlling two separate aircraft. So there's certainly something to be looked at there in terms of the air traffic controller not being able to do what they were supposed to do because there was a lack of one extra air traffic controller was not there that could have and should have been there to direct the two different aircraft instead of one guy directing both aircraft at the same time.
And this is something we talked about in the meeting last night too. The ATC on their monitors have the collision alerts. Okay,
right.
There should have been bells ringing, lights flashing, you know, fingers pointing. I mean, and no response. I mean, so what you're saying is the ATC was understaffed. And if you want to take it a step further, understaffed because of the DEI hiring practices. Yes, right. I said it. Deal with it, lefties.
They turned down over 1,000 qualified applicants because of DEI, and they didn't have enough of the desired sex, race applicants. So that I left a deficit of 1,000 ATC people.
I would rather have, and I'm being really serious about this, I would rather have an entire ATC facility filled with black people with purple hair and rings through their noses if they could do the job and they were really great at their job, okay, than anyone. It doesn't matter. To me, it doesn't matter. Color doesn't matter. Nothing matters except can you do this job? And if you can, great. If you can't, get the hell out of here.
Right.
Go work at Popeyes or something. I don't know. But that's just me. But, okay. So, but to your assessment, given your military background and all the things you know, and the people
I flew 57 combat missions over Vietnam, and I was in the
right seat. Did I get shot at? I mean.
Oh, we took hits, you know, all the time.
Was that fun for you, John?
50 caliber tracer looks like a golf ball on fire coming up at you. You'll never forget that at night. I flew right seat and in the co-pilot's position for I think 13 of those missions, and I've got about 20 hours in my my log as a student also. So I'm just a student pilot as far as that goes. But in a congested area, altitude is very critical. It's not like they were flying over the cornfields of Kansas. Everything you do, altitude, direction, speed, is very important in a congested area as it is around D.C. Being at the wrong altitude can result in a fatal consequences. It's very critical that everything be followed exactly the way the ATCs are telling you. Altitude, speed, direction, what you're on the lookout for. It's all very critical.
Okay, if I can humor me on this, folks. Here's what I thought of over the weekend. I don't know. Maybe it was a pizza dream. I woke up. I think it was Sunday morning. No, yeah, it was Sunday morning. I woke up, and I remembered. Remember the movie, the sequel to Die Hard. It was Die Hard 2. There was a whole
series of old films. Yeah,
right. But this is the one at the airport. I don't know, the 2, 3, 4, whatever it was. All right. So there was a group of mercenaries that took over the Cybertronics, if you will. And on that one aircraft, they changed the altitude, the altimeter of the aircraft. So it came in lower than the readout showed. And I was thinking to myself, in this day of hacking and backdoors and software and, you know, all of this stuff, could it be possible that the helicopter, the altimeter read 200 feet lower than they actually were? And even if so, and if that happened, you would think that they would see they would see the jet and be able to adjust. But what if they couldn't adjust? So my question to you is, could this have been like a cyber event? And if so, why that plane? Why that helicopter?
Good question. Well, that's, you know, you and I live in the world of evidence, and we don't have evidence of that. It's interesting speculation, but in the absence of evidence, that's all yeah. speculation.
But, as I like to say, evidence of absence is not absence of evidence. So you've heard that, right?
That's right.
So, yeah.
Okay. It needs to be thrown in the mix and held back for review when more hard evidence shows up, I would think, Doug.
Yeah, I think we have to kind of put a pin in this until we're able to assess the black box, the transmissions and such. But keep your eyes on this, because I got this bad feeling. I just do. When we have shoulder fire missiles coming across the flipping border because of this, the potato head Biden knee pads, McKnee pads, Harris, Mayorkas. By the way, where's Mayorkas? John, where the hell is Mayorkas? Have you seen him recently? Well, what rock has he crawled in under?
If he's smart, he's gone to a country with no extradition in the United States.
Amen to that. I want to talk to Mayorkas, that communist Cuban Cubo. I want to talk to him. I want 5 minutes in a room with him. And I don't know.
Think 5 minutes will be enough?
For the answers I want, if I have a baseball bat with me, yeah. Yeah. And Eric the Tech with me, yeah. And you, John, I'll tell you what. You, me, Eric the Tech, and we'll get answers. Anyway, all right. So, yeah. So what the hell happened? So then again, okay, the next day we have another aircraft go down, which was a Mercy flight. What the hell happened there? That thing went into the ground like a flipping missile.
I saw it. You know, it was really tragic.
Indeed, yes. Heaven.
Learjet is an extraordinary, exceptional aircraft with a great safety record. Typically, the pilots that fly those are very talented with hundreds and hundreds of hours of flight time. Hopefully there'll be a black box recovery that will give us some answers, because that is so out of the norm for that to happen.
Man, you know what? On one of the videos I saw, and look, maybe, how do you authenticate a video anymore? You can't, unless you've taken it or you know somebody who did take it and see the raw file. And I mean the literal raw file, RAW file.
There probably are technicians that can do that, but I don't know. A normal human being without specialized skills and equipment, I don't think could tell the difference anymore.
Right. But it looked like there was smoke trailing that plane coming down. And I don't know. Okay.
You know, the Learjet?
The Learjet, yeah. I don't know. But that to me... Now, to me, that looked more like a.
I believe we just have two engines. If one engine failed, they should have enough power in the remaining engine to put the plane down safely.
Okay, now because of your flying experience, when you're in a dive, altitude without regard to altitude, when you're in a dive. What are you supposed to do at the controls?
Well, you have to pull out of it. You have to pull back the wheel or the stick, depending on what you got, and pull back the wheel towards you to pull out of it.
And do you reduce or increase speed?
Increasing speed might give you a better chance of pulling out of it, yeah.
Okay, and that's the only reason I'm thinking maybe this was just a sad, tragic accident, because now I don't know crap about flying, except that I don't like to fly. Okay, if God intended us to fly, he would have given us wings, but I don't like to fly. But and you flying and taking 50 cal, you know, what's wrong with you? And jumping out of airplanes and jumping.
Hey, when you're 10 feet tall and bulletproof, you do that stuff.
I guess. I need a fifth of bourbon in me to do that. But anyway, which, and I don't drink. But okay, so where's I going with this? Except to say, I guess that's the only reason I would say that looks perhaps like an accident. Like the pilot was like, holy crap, and catastrophic mechanical failure.
There were several catastrophic failures all at the same time for that kind of crash to happen.
Yeah, yeah. And that was a Mexican aircraft taking a young pediatric patient back to Mexico, and two doctors, two pilots, and the patient and mom. So I don't think any high-level people aboard that plane. But, boy, wow, how sad is that? Okay.
It is. It's tragedy.
Now, I got another question for you. What the hell's going on? We heard an explanation about the drones. Do you believe it? It's FAA. It was, you know, nothing to see here. And look, this is from the Trump press department.
Right.
Why don't I believe this? Why? Do you believe it?
Well, if the explanation was as simple as being put forth, why didn't it come out 2 months ago?
There you go, for crying out loud! All the potato head had to say, or the corn rolled lesbian KJP had to say, was, "Hey, calm down, everybody. We're doing some stuff over here. It has really nothing to do with anything. We just do this. Just relax. Go back, you know, shopping and eating. They're getting DoorDash and all that crap."
During this, when Biden was still president, a high level official saying, "We don't know what they are, but there's no threat."
Yeah. That's what I tell my wife. Hey, I heard, honey, I heard some outside. I'll go check. I go check, you know, look around and came back. I don't know what it was, but there's no threat. Meanwhile, I got a black bear, 7 foot tall black bear, you know, in my neighbor's house. Yeah. No, you know, I'm not buying this explanation. That's just me, though. I don't care who it is. I don't care. Tell me the truth, somebody. I mean, so John, your thoughts on this?
There's a claim that the these 8 and 10 foot wide drones were privately owned. I imagine a person wealthy enough they could buy a 10 foot wide drone. But
wait a second. Are these the drones that somebody picked up at the 7-Eleven?
Exactly right.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
I think
convenience store, I think.
Yeah, I think the biggest drone you can buy off Amazon may be 2 or 3 feet across at the most. These are serious pieces of equipment that have a lot of capabilities as far as payload they can carry, infrared capability, night vision capability. a lot of when you get something that size and that expensive, a lot of capability.
You know, if you've got a drone the size of an SUV, couple of things. Number one, call me because I'd like to be your friend. Okay. Because obviously you got some money and talent, and we can do a lot with a drone that size. I just think we're getting a bunch of smoke blown up our skirts here, and I think that there's something a little bit more going on, and it ain't right. But I'm okay. All right. Now, one more thing, because again, I wrote a column for Wisconsin Christian News. So I submitted it this weekend, and it was about mainly about the fire apocalypse. Okay. And I went through some things. Let me see if I can pull up something here. I want to know what the hell, with respect to the fires in California, and let's not forget the fires in Maui. Let's not forget the Hurricane Helene in Appalachia with respect to Western Tennessee and Eastern Tennessee, Western North Carolina, and other states there. I'm not convinced that these are actions that are intentional, and it's for a land grab and for a depopulation effort. What are your thoughts on all of this?
Well, the real estate in Hawaii is some of the most valuable, desirable real estate in the United States. Same thing in California. President Trump laid it out pretty well as far as California, where if things that he had suggested when he was president the first time had been followed, the strategy wouldn't have happened. They would have got rid of all the dead brush that became the fuel. The water would have been there. And, of course, he's got the water flowing now. Of course, it's a bit late.
Do you know, okay, and this is something I was trying to do some research on. Maybe you have and can help me. The diversion of water from the north, okay, to the south. There's not really a spigot like a faucet in someone's bathroom, but there is a network of I don't know which things that make the water go where you want it to go, as opposed to the ocean. Do you know a lot? Do you know much about those, or about that mechanics of that up there?
I don't have a real detailed working knowledge of it, Doug. Other than the responsibility of the authorities is to have the reservoirs full of water, so it's there when it's needed, and they were negligent in their responsibility.
Yeah, definitely. I was looking back just real quick, the different fires, August complex fire in 2020, 44 fires ranged from August of 2020 to November, 1 million acres gone, 6 counties in California, Dixie fire in 2021, 1 fire, July to October, almost 100 million acres, or I'm sorry, 100,000 acres, 983,000 acres to be exact. Okay, in Northern California. The Lahaina fire in Hawaii. A series of fires in Hawaii. And you know, about those, I'm not so sure that we can rule out direct energy weapons. I'm really not sure we can, in any case. What are your thoughts on direct energy weapons? And
well, they exist. They can be used. I'm not sure what forensic analysis can determine if they were used, but that analysis needs to be made to see if, in fact, directed energy weapons were used in both cases, Los Angeles and Hawaii.
Amen. Because over 2,200 homes, businesses were destroyed in Lahaina. Okay, that much we know. And interestingly enough, you have now. John, in your career, I know you were not an arson investigator, which is a specialty all unto itself. But you've seen fires in your
of course, yeah.
career,
right?
Anything strike you unusual about these fires? Whether it's in Lahaina or whatever?
Yeah, there's been some photos of burned up cars just a few feet away from a tree that saw those leaves on it, things like that. It's kind of around the edges. I don't know anything I would say was a definitive report. But the same thing in Hawaii, where there was incidents of things being burned up where combustible things were nearby and did not burn.
Right.
That's enough to get a more serious forensic investigation going, I think.
And, you know, to me, a lot of this mirrors a lot of this, when you look at 9/11, what happened on 9/11, you see some really weird things with 9/11. Okay. I mean, the pulverization of everything. We're not talking about seeing, you know, part of a sink, part of a desk, part of a file cabinet. I mean, dust.
Right.
Okay. And then, of course, you see cars blocks away that have disintegrated by fire.
Right.
And other things untied. So there's a lot of similarities in my mind between what happened on 9/11 to today. Without getting into 9/11 and such, I'm just saying right now, just take the last, okay, and then I'm going to shut up, but take the last number of years here. We had, and I noted this, and the average acreage destroyed by, for example, by wildfires, getting back to those in America, was 3 to 4 million acres from the mid-80s to 2000. Okay, so 3 to 4 million acres on average per year. Okay, now, from 2014 forward, it's doubled. Okay, what the hell? And there's a couple of things I think I can attribute to that. One would be geoengineering. I think things are being dumped into our atmosphere that come to the ground and the cause act as an incendiary agent, in addition to other things. But that's one thing. But John, I think we're being destroyed. That's just me. I mean, your thoughts on the larger picture.
What are you talking about, the fires in particular?
Fires, you know, this is part of the global reset, I think, the bigger agenda. Yeah, I'm talking about the fires in particular now. We're being displaced, destroyed, not allowed to rebuild. You got Karen Bass, the mayor, who's nothing but a Marxist, you know, who took part in a group that was responsible for November 7th, 1983 bombing of the Capitol. I don't know how many people know that. You got Gavin Newsom. You got a lot of these people involved in this that are tied onto this New World Order, Great Reset, WEF crap. So anyway, I just think we're being victimized by our own government. That's just me.
Well, parts of our government clearly have been involved in the release of the Kennedy files, both John and Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King. That's been resisted for more than half a century, going back to 1963. And those files being released, I think, are going to open up a lot of people's eyes about the involvement of the government in these assassinations.
Do you really think that we're going to learn anything new?
I think it's very possible. If all the files are released, yes, especially for John Kennedy. All right.
Okay. I mean, if I was involved in the government and I was involved in one of the biggest crimes of the century, I don't think I'd keep, it's just me, but I don't think I'd keep stuff laying around, files. I mean, I don't know.
Well, hey, we'll see. We will see. It's thousands of documents, and hopefully they have not been tampered with, and they will be released unredacted.
Yeah, yeah. On an upside, I think this is an upside. What is your, at this point, what are you looking at that gives you the most hope in terms of taking our government back, putting down the rabid leftist, communist, Muslim scumbags that you referenced so eloquently.
Socialists, communists, Democrats, Muslims. Well,
those people. Yes,
I would say yes.
Along with the fruitcakes. Yeah, yeah.
Generically, the Trump administration would be giving me hope that the senior executive service, socialists, communists, Democrats, Muslims, can be overcome with a combination of 4 years of President Trump, followed by 8 years of J.D. Vance. Those 12 years could turn the ship of state around to the point where they've lost for a generation. They're not going to go away. Which brings up something else we've mentioned before on other shows, Doug, that desperate people do desperate things. When the communists see their opportunity slipping away from them, they may use more harmful tactics involving the communist agents that are here to do a violent overthrow of our government, since the peaceful way is rapidly just falling apart, and they can't do anything to stop it. You're on mute there, Doug.
Yeah, I sure was. I can't. Eric the Tech can't be here holding my hand every day. All right. Are we winning at this point? Are we winning? And what is your... I don't want to be glib about
we're
this.
At, we're at our weakest right now. Militarily, we're at our weakest for the next 2 years at least. Yeah. This would be the time. If I was with the Chinese Politburo, I would say strike now while the U.S. is still at its weakest point. Beginning about 2 years from now, we will be rebuilding the military to be the world's fiercest fighting machine. Within 4 years, it will be the world's fiercest fighting machine. But right now, we're at a weak point. This would be the time to attack, in my opinion, while we're at our weakest point.
And what would the attack look like in your eyes? I know that's speculation. I know that's out there. But we can't not think about this. I mean, would it be cyber?
It'll be asymmetric warfare, okay. Waging war in about 20 different ways. Look at the goal. Keep that in mind. The communists want to capture the lower 48 and have it become new China with no Americans present. They don't want a nuclear wasteland. They don't want critical infrastructure destroyed. The bridges, the locks and dams, the airports, the hydroelectric, all the electric generating capability, all the things that they want to use for themselves. They don't want that wrecked and destroyed. So the commandos would focus on taking out leadership, maybe a serious biological warfare attack, and using the principles of General Sun Tzu, who wrote The Art of War more than 2,000 years ago. They want to capture the United States with the least amount of loss to their own side. And they fully intend to do that, Doug.
And I would suggest anyone who has not read The Art of War to pick that up, even at a used bookstore, or you can buy them used online. Certainly it's, or you can, I think you might even be able to find it free online. But
yeah, there's a number of different translations. Yeah. I've got a couple of different ones. Typically it's in the business book section, by the way. In a bookstore,
as where it should be. Wow. Well, John Moore, thelibertyman.com has accompanied me tonight, and I'm so grateful for him to do that. You know, we're both hurting over the loss of Kirk Finney, and John's got a great program every morning from 7 a.m. his time, okay, to 10 his time. Folks, go to thelibertyman.com and listen to him. You can also drill down for the archives. He brings class to this show, this platform, the class that I otherwise do not display, he displays. And of course, there on your screen is his website, thelibertyman.com. Make sure you bookmark that website, check out all of the articles, and support those people who support him and support John. We have to stick together in this. We have to stick together. We really do. As we walk through this minefield.
It's not over, Doug.
Oh, it's not even close, man. Not even close.
No.
We've got about 40 seconds. Your closing remarks in 40 seconds, because well, we are
always,
going to
always keep in mind, ultimately, it's a spiritual war, and to pray without ceasing, pray for our President Trump, pray for J.D. Vance, our families, pray for our republic, that we will overcome all these demonic things we need to deal with, sir.
Man, I'll tell you what, you are absolutely right. Recognize, too, that this is a spiritual war, not a, not just a kinetic war, or not just a war on the ground, and realize the spiritual component of this. And also, folks, realize where you fit in your lives, because God put you here for a reason. You're here for a reason. Everyone listening, everyone viewing, you are an important part of the fight in which we find ourselves. John, stick with me, because now we are going to, I just want to address this. Again, Randy Taylor, folks, he's recovering from surgery. Thank you for your prayers. He thanks you for your prayers. So there's that. He's recovering. We'll be talking with him later in the week, after he gets unsedated and, gets to be moving around a little bit. But Kirk Finney passed away on, this weekend in his sleep. He was born in 1960, 64 years old. Kirk was married to Kathy, is married to Kathy. They've been together for almost 40 years. They've been married for 34 years. They've got 5 children, 2 grandchildren. And we asked Kathy, Eric the Tech specifically has done so much, reached out, asked Kathy what music Kirk enjoyed, so we could use it to close tonight's show. Now, he was a fan of Bob Seger. And if we were able to ask Kirk what song he'd like us to play for him, knowing Kirk, he would most likely pick one to dedicate to Kathy. And wow. Kathy was everything to him. Whenever they were both on the phone with Eric and myself, he always bragged about her. It was phenomenal. So to honor Kirk, we've picked a specific song. Eric the Tech, as a matter of fact, picked this song by Bob Seger that he would have loved to play for Kathy. Kirk, we're going to miss your brother. Go ahead, Eric.
Last night I saw you walking past my bed late at night, and the moon shone through your gown. Such a fine memory. I think I'm gonna take it with me. And late as you were sleeping, sleeping close to me, I felt your hair on my skin. Such a fine memory. I know I'm gonna take it with me. I'm gonna take it far as I go. I'm gonna take it far as I go. Was getting light, and the sun came through the trees. I had a fine memory. such a fine memory.